It's Monday, the 8th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Clay Thompson. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monitor podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Superfluous Username. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. And if you want to be like Superfluous Username and not only have the greatest iTunes review name ever and be a sponsor of the podcast, all you need to do is leave a review and you can be a sponsor of the podcast. Hopefully you can come up with something just as clever as Superfluous Username. I really enjoyed that when I saw that come through. So, very straightforward. Sponsor the podcast, leave a review. Not only does it help me out in terms of hearing what you like and what you don't like, it helps the show grow as well, and I'm always very appreciative of that. Also, don't forget Moneyball, which is Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. If you are in Australia or you live in New Zealand, make sure you're checking out DFS and playing all the DFS NBA action on there. The NFL stuff just wound up today. There's going to be, English Premier League soccer, there's A-League soccer, there's international cricket. There's going to be AFL and NRL happening on Moneyball as well. And who knows what else they're going to be bringing in the future. So make sure you're checking out Moneyball. All right, we had Super Bowl Sunday. Hopefully your team won. I was wanting Carolina to win. So I'm a big Cam Newton fan. I do like what he does. But I am also happy that Peyton Manning won, because I hate the comments of, he's only won one ring. He's terrible. He's trash. I hate that. I don't know. It just really bugs me when someone can be that good and they all put it down to, I know championships matter, but I hate the championships talk. Oh, he's only got one ring. If you've got three rings, you're a better quarterback than someone with one ring. Same goes to basketball, goes to any sport. I hate that discussion. It really pisses me off. So I'm glad that Peyton got his second one. Not that he was a massive part of it this year, but still, for those people who then go to talk, he's only got one ring. Well, hey, that's not going to happen anymore. That's just a discussion that really bugs me in any sort of sport. It's extremely frustrating. Congratulations to the Denver Broncos. Commiserations to the Carolina Panthers. That's enough football talk. Football is done. Hey, and if you have been paying attention to NFL and you're just joining the podcast now, welcome. This is NBA time. Well, it's always been NBA time for us. It's NBA time for me and for most of the guys listening here. 365 days a year, 366 days this year, in fact. But for many of you, I know football's over. Welcome. Let's hope you enjoy everything that's happening in the NBA season. It's been a crazy one so far. Let's recap the Facebook and Instagram contest from yesterday. When you're going and entering your answers on Instagram, it would be great if you guys could tag a couple of mates who'd be interested in having a guess. This is not necessarily fantasy related anyway, these contests. Just tag a mate, have a contest about picking these things. Yesterday's one we did on Facebook, we did Hassan Whiteside. How many combined blocks and rebounds would Whiteside have? No one got that right, because Whiteside did not have a single block. He grabbed 10 boards, but not one block. So no one guessed 10 as the correct answer. On Instagram, we went with Danilo Gallinari. How many free throw attempts will he have? Gallinari took another 10 free throw attempts. Crazy numbers he's had this year. Two people got that right. At Spider Dan 86, and I think that's Spider Dan's second win, so congratulations there. And R McGraw 15, so both those guys on Instagram got it correct. For Monday's Facebook contest, we're going to be doing Chris Paul. How many combined assists, steals, and three-pointers will Chris Paul have? And on Instagram, we're going to be doing straight up Anthony Davis. How many points is he going to score? Don't forget, tag your mates, get a couple of guys in there, and let's boost the number of entrants in these contests and get more chatter happening on Instagram and on Facebook. That's that part done. Hopefully today's podcast, fingers crossed, hopefully I don't waffle on for an hour and a half in today's podcast. I do apologize for the length of the last two. There's only four games to talk about on Sunday, so enough bullshit from me.
Let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night. I couldn't hang a Sacramento Kings jersey up behind me because I don't have one. It's on its way. I went with the Celtics theme instead tonight because that's who played the Kings. But anyway, the monstrous line of the night goes to Rajon Rondo of the Sacramento Kings. He played 39 minutes, had 14 points, and was 5 of 10 from the field. So that's great when you get that from Rondo. It's great when you get 3 of 4 from the free throw line from Rondo as well. He added a triple. He had 5 rebounds. He had 15 assists, and he had 6 steals. And those 15 assists and 6 steals is really where the massive amount of value comes from Rondo. He has been incredibly good this season, much better than I could have anticipated. He is a top 25 player on the course of the season, and if you're aware of his deficiencies, like his 58% free throws, he would be a much higher ranked player. Did not see it coming from him, to be honest. I thought that the game had passed him by, and this is not a contract year narrative sort of thing. Last year was a contract year for him, remember, as well. And then he turned in the worst season of his career. So that's not the way it's gone. And you know what's actually helped Rondo is he struggled to start the season. He wasn't great. Darren Collison got hurt, and then they gave Rondo big minutes. And then from then, he just started flying. They were benching him down the stretch. He wouldn't play in fourth quarters. He'd only get 28 minutes a game to start the season. He wasn't really playing that well. Collison got hurt. They had no choice, and they were playing him 40 minutes, 45 minutes, 46 minutes, and things were flying. Now, not saying that he is necessarily the best fit for this team or he's playing great basketball, but for fantasy purposes, he's putting up really, really good numbers. 12 points, 12 assists, 2 steals, 6 rebounds. He's almost giving you a 3 a game, which is a massive bonus. At 46% from the field, that's not killer. And the 58% from the free throw line, he's only on 2 attempts. So again, that's not a big killer either. So Rondo has been a bit of a massive surprise this season. I think that's fair to say. The waiver wire line of the night and the young gun of the night is the same person, because somehow Aaron Gordon is owned in only 59% of leagues. I just need to re-highlight it. I think I talked about it on yesterday's podcast. He's had a couple of down games, but he still has to be owned. We needed to see how this was going to play out over the next 2 weeks, and hopefully you were able to add him if he was floating around on your waiver wire. He turned in a massive performance. He played 34 minutes. He went 11-13, but added 4 assists, 2 steals, and 4 blocks. That's where his ability is. He can do bits and pieces of everything. His rebounding has been really, really impressive lately, putting up some big rebounding numbers. In fact, over the last 2 weeks, he's averaging 9.9 boards. But where he can really elevate his fantasy game is getting the steals and blocks up. He could be a triple one player. You know, I think quite comfortably the threes are probably going to be the hardest part, but he can get up to a steal a game, a block and a half a game, you know, 0.7 threes. He's going to have real value throwing 10 rebounds, and if he can get his field goal percentage up over what he's doing at the moment, which is he's at 39% over these last 2 weeks, back if he can get back to the 47 he was shooting or he is shooting over the course of the season, you're going to see some big numbers from Aaron Gordon. He's a guy that you need to own, and you need to really have a look at him. I think that there's going to be pretty decent minutes for him down the stretch. I can't envisage a situation where he gets less than 30 minutes in this post All-Star break situation for the Magic. I think that his field goal percentage will bump back up, and the other numbers will start to grow as well. I am convinced he will be a top 100 player in this post All-Star break period. So make sure he's owned. It's very straightforward. He has to be owned in basically all leagues. And we're actually going to talk about Aaron Gordon a bit later on in the trade talk segment of the podcast. An interesting trade that came through from one of the listeners, which I'll go through with in that section later on. Now, when I do dart of the night, what I do is I get everyone's performance for the day. I have a look at them. I put them through my ranking system and scroll right down to the bottom and look at who is the player with the worst performance who is owned in over 70% of leagues. I had to go a long way up today to find the lowest ranked player, and the lowest ranked player that came up was Dwayne Wade, but I don't want to call him a dud of the night because his performance was decent. He had 17 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. Where he really fell off, though, is the fact that he went 7 of 20 from the field and then 3 of 5 from the free throw line, so that's a little bit disappointing, but it's hard to call a 17-3-3 night a real dud. Overall, yes, it was a net negative in his contribution, really only giving you positive numbers in points, and that's really it. But hard to call Dwayne Wade a dud of the night, but for the sake of completeness, he is the dud of the night. A couple of, he's been really strong lately, a top 50 guy over the last 2 weeks. Not quite the same guy as what he's been all season, but he's still been remarkably healthy and remarkably productive. The thing that has dropped off for him over the last couple of seasons is his shooting efficiency. His last 2 years in the LeBron Miami Heat era, he was shooting 52 and 55% from the field, 47 last year, first year post LeBron, and then this year he's down to 45. That all makes a lot of sense. It's something you could have envisaged happening, you could have predicted happening, and it's continuing to drop as his athleticism drops, as the team changes around him, as his game continues to evolve, and that's exactly what's happening with Dwayne Wade at the moment. But for fantasy, we're just happy that he's staying healthy and he's producing nice value, and it's almost value around where he was drafted. In fact, I'd probably think that he was drafted an ADP in most competitive leagues, maybe a little bit lower than 74. because people were shit scared of the injuries. In a public league, name brand recognition, he might have gone higher. I'm grabbing Dwayne Wade. But in a league with people who know what is going on in the league and have legitimate concerns and things like that about his injury, I reckon he would have dropped even past 75. So I reckon many of you who have Dwayne Wade would have grabbed him in maybe the eighth round, maybe even the ninth round. I don't know. He would have dropped quite a bit in some of those type of formats. All right, that is the awards of the night. Now, just a quick break for a word from our presenting sponsor today, SeatGeek. Whether you're looking to buy tickets to a game or sell tickets you can't use, you need to check out SeatGeek. It's the smartest way to buy and sell tickets for your favorite sports team. SeatGeek, it's awesome. Now, I don't have a massive amount of use for it here in Australia, but my brother, who's recently moved to the States, he is going to see the Warriors and Rockets during the week. He used SeatGeek to get his tickets. Hey, it's the perfect way to do it. You're in a city, you want tickets to a game, look up SeatGeek, you can find them. Also, if you've got an extra ticket and you can't get rid of it, go on to SeatGeek, sell it. Very straightforward. You can get tickets the day of the game, you can get them in advance, and the prices you find are generally much cheaper. SeatGeek pulls all the ticket buying and selling options from other ticket sites into one place to save you time. It also knows the fair market value of every ticket, and they use that information to show you the best deals and help you find underpriced seats. If you have tickets you can't use, SeatGeek will help you price your tickets on their site so that you can quickly sell them to another fan. SeatGeek has the lowest fees on any ticket site out there and always shows you the full price up front. All my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code REDROCK, which is just one word. I'll put that up on the screen for you guys watching the video. There you go. Red Rock, one word. SeatGeek will send you $20 once you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code REDROCK today. Straightforward, isn't it? Let's now get into these box scores from Sunday's action. There were four games, so hopefully today's section won't go as long as the other days. Let's get into that right now. All right, the first game we're going to take a look at is, there you go, you can see it on the screen, the Denver Nuggets and the New York Knicks. But all these games were early ones. The Nuggets with another strong victory, really playing above themselves at the moment. Will Barton getting into another strong run of form. He played 29 minutes off the bench, 19-11-5, a steal and a block after a definite slump. The minutes haven't really recovered, so it's hard for him to get over 30 minutes at the moment. But his production is definitely back up there. So some nice numbers from Will Barton. Ken Fareed, only 26 minutes. This basically feels like who he is at this point. I don't think he's ever going to see 30 minutes, or at least not this season. 14-6, and this is 26 minutes with Darrell Arthur sidelined. 14-6 with a block. At the moment, what he's doing is basically what he's doing. I wouldn't expect him to get better. Yes, over the last couple of seasons, he's had really strong post-All-Star break runs, but that's because the coaching has then gone, all right, Fareed, for whatever reason, in February and March, you're going to play 33 minutes a game or 32 minutes a game. I'm not really sure that I see Mike Malone doing that, so I'm not putting my money down on Fareed being a massive post-All-Star, let's-go-crazy sort of guy. I think he's sort of fit into this role here in this 26, 27-minute starting role, and it basically is who he is. Nikola Jokic really highlighted how good of a fantasy player he's become. He only played 19 minutes, but he still put up 13-6, hit a triple, had a steal, went 4 of 9 from the field, and hit all 4 of his free throws. Overall, that's basically a positive Z score. And in limited minutes. Now, he played limited minutes. It's just the way the flow of the game was going. Joffrey Lavernier got really hot and played some extra minutes there as well. Nothing for me to panic about Jokic. If he only plays 19 minutes and gets 13-6 with a steal and a three, I'm wrapped, because most players, Kenneth Fareed, can't even, he barely produced that in 26 minutes. And that's where Jokic gets it. If he plays 22 minutes, he's ownable. If he plays 30, he's through the roof. And that's why I'm not panicking at all over this. Joffrey Lavernier, I mentioned, played 29 minutes, 12-10 for him with a block. Look, he just is not something that he's going to do very often. We'll leave that in and put it in the fluke category. I don't think that's going to happen all that often. Danilo Gallinari, again, just really strong getting to the free throw line. 9 of 10 from there. 19 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, and 2 triples. Hurting your field goal percentage, really bolstering your free throw percentage. That's the MO for him this year. And Emmanuel Mudiay, speaking of hurting percentages, 6 of 18 from the field, 1 of 4 from the free throw line, but didn't have a turnover, so that's an improvement. But 15 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, and 2 triples. He is really, really good in points leagues, And if you're punting those percentages, he makes a look. That's a significant rise in what he's able to do rankings wise. Gary Harris has had a real couple of quiet games at the moment, 40 minutes. So the playing time is still there for Harris. So even when he struggles, the playing time is there. 4-4-3 with a steal. If he's available in a 12-team league and I've got someone to cut, you know that I believe pretty strongly in Harris, assuming that what he does is what I need, and that's some threes and some steals and some generally pretty good free throw percentage. It has to be what I need, though. Yusuf Nurkic played only 7 minutes here, 3 points and a steal. I think it's going to be really tough for him to influence many fantasy leagues this year. He just seems out of shape. He's got a couple of guys ahead of him playing really well. It just doesn't appear like he's going to even get to 20 minutes this year. So any hope of him being a standard league savior is probably out the window for me. On to the Knicks. Melo was back. He played 35 minutes, 21, 6, and 7. That's a decent sort of productive night. 7 of 19 from the field is not good. 7 of 8 from the free throw line is good. Now, there's lots of talk and people, is Melo going to get shut down? You know my thoughts on shutting down, guys. He might, but only if he suffers an injury. I don't imagine. And last season, he wasn't shut down because he was sore. He was shut down because he had to have surgery on his knee. Now, that could be the case this year. He could need surgery on his knee, but we're not at that stage yet. He's going to have a few missed games, definitely. But this idea of players just going, I'm done, I'm just not playing, it just doesn't happen. And these are guys who have got legitimate injuries. And my issue last year, if you heard any of last year's podcasts with Melo, when I was pretty harsh on him, it wasn't because he stopped playing and had surgery. It was because of the way that he did it and the fact that he wasted 2 months in just hanging around so he could play the All-Star game before he shut it down, and the complete transparency of what he was doing without him actually saying what he was doing really pissed me off. No problem with a guy getting injured and having to have surgery, because obviously he needed it. It took him months to come back, and that's also a problem with his rusty start here that leads on to the selfish decision he had the other day. And I saw it the other day last season where he delayed the surgery to play in the All-Star game, and it impacted this season. That's something I didn't like. Yeah, but that's just Melo's nature, it appears. Like this season, again, like he's having these DMPs here and he's got a bit of soreness in his knee, but his priority, I have to make sure I play the All-Star game. Why? I've got no idea, but that's just who he is, and that's not something that I care for, but that's just who he is. I don't believe he's going to be shut down unless there is an injury happening, and that is my thoughts on basically everyone playing. Tyreke Evans, yes, he could get shut down, but he's not like, again, it's not just, don't play, mate, you're good. He's legitimately got a knee injury, and he needs surgery to fix it. That's what a shutdown is. It's like, you are not playing the rest of this season because your knee is damaged, and we don't want it to get worse. That's what that is. Anyway, I hope I've addressed my thoughts on that. I think that's pretty clear. Aaron Aflalo, 40 minutes, 15 and 6, 3 assists, a steal, and a 3. You can probably own him in 12-team leagues. I probably won't. But he's having more good games recently than bad games. But the way that his career has gone, the way his last couple of seasons has gone, you know that that's about to regress, and there's going to be a stretch of stinkers for Aflalo. About that rookie wall.
Porzingis.
He broke through it yet again. I'm as shocked as you. 21 and 13 for Porzingis. A triple, 2 assists, 2 blocks, 10 of 23 from the field. I hope you bought low when everyone was panicking that he was done, he was cooked for the season. I hope you bought low. The Jose Calderon swapping jobs for Langston Galloway situation is not happening. The first game back, Calderon played 12 minutes and Galloway played 30. And we thought, maybe is Galloway taking this starting job away from him? I said, look, that's a chance. You go and add Galloway. You do not drop Calderon and you wait and see. The last two games, Calderon's been at 30 minutes. He was here again as well, 11-4-3 with 3 triples. So if you liked Calderon and he helped you before his groin injury, he's going to do the same thing, it appears. Now, maybe at some point in the next, or maybe at the trade deadline, something happens. But for now, Calderon's value is that guy who can hit some threes, get some assists, maybe some steals, and help you as a low-end point guard. Robin Lopez, at least he got to 30 minutes in this one. Only 5 points and 5 rebounds, but helped out with 3 blocks, while Langston Galloway, who I just mentioned then, played only 21 minutes, 6-3 with a couple of triples. He's not a must-hold guy, but unless there's really a move you need to make, let's just see what plays out over these next couple of games with Galloway. Not much else to really talk about on the Knicks, I don't think. The Atlanta Hawks and the Orlando Magic. Kent Bazemore back in business, 23-8, 3 triples, 1 assist, 2 steals. Big night from Bazemore. He's been a guy who, like Will Barton, had been in a real slump. Has he broken out of it completely? He was playing the Magic, who is not a great team, but his last four games have been encouraging. He's back inside the top 100 in that time, going 13, 5, and 3.5, two triples, 1.5 steals. They're all good numbers. Still worried about an overall regression in his play because I just really don't think he's that good a player. But he's picked it back up. His minutes are starting to slowly come back up as well, and you know, probably should be owned in most spots. Jeff Teague, 24 points, 5 assists, 3 triples and a steal, 35 minutes for Teague. There is no concern for Teague at the moment. The trade deadline is definitely an issue, and it's something we have to monitor closely. And Dennis Schroeder, I'm still holding him. You've got like 2 or 3 games to go. Let's see what happens. 13 minutes for Schroeder, 6-4 with a triple and an assist. Trade deadline passes and both guys are still on the Hawks. Schroeder's ass is out of there. There's no way I'm holding on to him. I've held him for 2 weeks, I think, now, waiting for something to happen because we know that the upside that he's got. But if nothing happens, forget about it. Paul Millsap, 14-9, 2 steals, 2 blocks and a 3, exactly what he does on a pretty regular basis, while Al Horford went 11-6-6 with 2 blocks. A decent night there. Kyle Korver also had a pretty good night, 10-6, but it's 2 triples, 2 steals, and 1 block that's really good there with Korver. Is he back to being a must-own player? Yeah, that's maybe debatable. In a 14-team league, yes. In a 12-team league, I'd say probably, but not necessarily. He is hitting over 2 threes a game in the last month. But the thing that's really causing him a bit of a drop-off is his field goal percentage, which has dropped a massive 6%, 7% from last year. That's a huge, huge drop. And his free throw percentage down 8% as well. And they're two things that propped up his value, along with the 3 threes again that he was hitting last year. They've come right down. So with them right down, his threes production down as well. To me, he doesn't really strike me as a must-own player. Sure, he's worth looking at, he's worth streaming, all that sort of stuff. But he's not someone that I have to hold on to with two tight hands and wait it out. On the Magic, Vic Oladipo, 44 minutes, 19-5-3, a triple one, ridiculous 9-13 shooting, been playing very well lately. Let's hope that Skiles allows this to continue. Nick Vucevic, 35 minutes, 22-9 with a couple of steals, big night from him. And Evan Fournier, who moved back into the starting lineup with Toby Harris out with that ankle problem. Fournier played 43 minutes, 21-5, 3 triples and 2 steals. And just when it looked like we were maybe figuring Skiles out and he was going to be reducing Fournier and giving the minutes to Hezonja, the last two games Fournier has played more minutes than Hezonja, comfortably more minutes. So he's back on the radar in 12-team leagues, but with Toby Harris back in the next game or two, I would imagine that Fournier then goes back to the bench and then he plays a 25-minute, a 24-minute role, and that might make him a little bit risky for now. See what you do, see what happens with him, but he's definitely not in that lock position of like he must be owned to run the season out. Alfred Payton, Lord Alfred Payton, in fact, played 33 minutes and had one of his best games for the season. 12 points, 12 assists, 1 steal, 4 rebounds, 1 block. Also hit 2 triples, a massive bonus from him. He's been nowhere near that sort of player pretty much all season, so I'm putting this one down to partial fluke, but not really because we do know that he's got this talent. I said the other day he's not necessarily a must-own guy. He does really have to fit specific teams. I do own him in two 12-team leagues, as I mentioned. If I'm in a 10-team league, I can probably do better. But there's not many guys with the ability to go for double-digit assists that are on the waiver wire, and he could be one of those players. But remember, it has to fit what you do, and don't be expecting this sort of performance because it's not something that he's done really at all this season. Mario Hezonja, only the 14 minutes here. Probably has something to do with the fact that he missed all 5 of his shots, didn't score, and had 1 rebound and 2 assists in 14 minutes. The arrow is still trending up on him, but the Skiles handbrake is just slowing it down somewhat. The Sacramento Kings and the Boston Celtics. Darren Collison played 28 minutes off the bench, 16-2-4, 2 steals and 2 triples. He's still a guy that I think should be owned in 12-team leagues. And DeMarcus Cousins went 31-7-6. Some pretty poor percentages, but he added 3 triples and not a terrible night from Boogie. Rudy Gay was out of this one. They didn't go with Omri Caspi in the starting lineup. They resurrected James Anderson, who played 18 minutes for 2 points. Cool. Good stuff, Jim. Marco Bellinelli started as well. He's going to be starting all the way up to All-Star break, it appears. 38 minutes for Bellinelli. 16-4-2 with 2 triples and a steal. Definitely a guy to watch. Or to add even in 12-team leagues for the short term, and anything deeper you want to, if a guy's getting 35 minutes a night, you need to pay attention, especially if he can score, he can get some steals, and he can hit some threes, and that's exactly what Bellinelli is doing. Willie Cauley-Stein, the minutes all over the place. This time we're in the middle. Before it was either 30 or 19. Here we're at 23. a really nice night, 15-4 with a steal and a block. He is not must own because of the fluctuability. Is that a word? Maybe. Fluctuability of his minutes and his production, and he's not going to be a high usage sort of player, but he can help in the defensive categories. Another steal, another block here. That's what he can do, plus a high field goal percentage. You can do a lot worse than owning him in 12-team leagues, but in some cases, you can probably do a lot better. Omri Caspi had 13 points in 29 minutes, had 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a 3 and a steal. A decent night there, but not enough to be worth an ad, with Rudy Gay likely back in the next game or so. On the Celtics, Isaiah Thomas, against his former team, played 28 minutes. He went 22-4-9, added 2 triples, 2 steals and a block. A very, very big performance from Isaiah Thomas. And that reminds me, I forgot to do the perfect DFS lineup. I'll do it later. Tyler Zeller, really back in the rotation now, and it's stuffing things up for everyone else. 22 minutes for Zeller, 17-7 in 2 blocks. If you're in need of a center, you could do a lot worse than adding Tyler Zeller. He is producing in the time that he's getting. He is looking pretty good while he's doing it. He's protecting the rim decently. He's a streaming big man to add in 14-team leagues and even in 12-team leagues, but you see the way that this rotation's happening. It's just really frustrating. 23 minutes for Salinger, 22 for Zeller, 19 for Amir Johnson, 17 for Kelly Olynyk, 10 minutes for Jonas Jerebko. None of these guys are going to get big enough minutes to really be consistent producers. Now, Jared Salinger was massive again, 21-6 with a 3 and 3 steals. He should probably be owned in all 12-team leagues. Amir Johnson, probably not. Kelly Olynyk at the moment, he's really suffering, probably not. And Zeller is a borderline guy. Avery Bradley, 25-3 with 3 assists and 6 triples. A nice night from him. We know what he is. He's a guy who can be hot, he can be cold, but he is worth owning in all 12-team formats. Well, Jay Crowder had another struggle. 6-4-3 with 2 steals for Crowder. Really sort of dropping off at the moment. Don't necessarily think that is indicative of his rest of season form or anything like that, but his numbers lately, not that good. His last 2 weeks are giving us 10, 4.8 rebounds, 1.5 steals, half a block, and a 3, which puts him outside the top 100. For the year, he's a top 35 guy, so definitely a buy low opportunity for Crowder, but don't be spending a top 40 player to go and get him. Evan Turner's strong run continued, 11-4-9 with a block. Only 27 minutes, but he doesn't need 35 minutes to put up big numbers. His value is coming from his ability to get assists, his ability to get some rebounds out of position, and his field goal percentage has been way up as well. So Evan Turner is strongly on the radar in standard leagues. Marcus Smart, 8-5-4 with two three-pointers. Not his best night. The last game of the night, the Los Angeles Clippers and the Miami Heat. Chris Paul, 22.7 assists and a couple of threes. Not a great efficiency night from him, going 8 of 23. And we can say the same for JJ Redick, who was 5 of 11, shooting 14 points with a 3 and a couple of steals. A decent night from those guys. DeAndre Jordan, not so decent at the free throw line. 3 of 14, 9 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists and 3 blocks. So did it in the other categories, exactly what you needed him to do. And Jamal Crawford's really getting extra usage here with the injuries to Blake Griffin and now to Austin Rivers. He played 34 minutes here. That's 30 plus minutes in the last two games. 20 points with 2 triples and 2 assists on 7 of 19 shooting. If you're adding Crawford, yes, you're going to get some points. Yes, you're going to get some threes. But watch what's going to happen to your field goal percentage, and you're not going to get contributions in other areas. He can be owned for sure, but really, really watch what he's able to do to your team. Wes Johnson only got 18 minutes, which I find criminal. He needs more than that. He was still productive. 10-7, 2 threes and 2 steals. And that's what I talk about with him all the time, is he gets big volume in the low volume categories. 2 threes and 2 steals is fantastic. And he, I say probably should be owned in 12-team leagues. He won't be owned in many 12-team leagues, but what he can give you is very, very underrated. Paul Pierce started, played 22 minutes, had 7-4. Cool. Luke Marmute played 20 minutes in his start and had 2-3. He is the leader in the clubhouse of the least with the most. Or is it Dion Waiters? I don't know which one it is. Or is it Tayshaun Prince? Oh, so many contenders. On the Miami Heat, Goran Dragic looking a lot better at the moment. 17-5-5 with a 3 3-pointers. And Luol Deng with a nice night. 15-8 with a 3 and an assist in 40 minutes for Deng. He's a borderline 12-team league guy, but I'm not really sure that he's a must-own with Hassan Whiteside back. And speaking of Whiteside, he only played 17 minutes. He's off the bench again. Really weird situation what they're doing with him, playing him off the bench these last couple of games while Amari Stoudemire starts. He had that big triple-double in the last one. Obviously wasn't able to get quite to that in this one. Still going to be a contributor, but just weird that he's getting so few minutes. Stoudemire had 2 points and 8 rebounds in his 16 minutes. Well, Dwayne Wade, I touched on him. He had 32. And Chris Bosh played 32 minutes as well. 17-5 with 3 triples and 2 assists. He is in a bit of a slump at the moment, especially with his shooting, Bosh. He was only 5 of 17 in this one. He was 4 of 7 from the free throw line. He did hit 3 triples, but his overall production is well down. Over the last 2 weeks, he's outside the top 120. And that's because his shooting, his free throw percentage is down at 69. His field goal percentage is down at 44.5%. His numbers have dropped considerably. His block numbers are down. His steal numbers are down. His rebounding is well down. He's in a slump. I think he's a great buy low target, and that's what we're going to talk about when we get to trade talk later on. I think that's it for this game. Justice, well, speaking of people who do the least with the most, Justice Winslow played 27 minutes and had 2 points on 5 missed shots. He did grab 10 rebounds, so he's been a really elite source of out-of-position rebounds. Needs to get these other stats happening. I think he can be a useful fantasy guy in the second half of the season, but we need to obviously wait and see that transpire. Let's now have a look at the perfect DFS lineup from Sunday. At point guard, Rajon Rondo 50.5 and Isaiah Thomas 45.3. I highlighted both those guys yesterday as both in revenge game situations going up against each other. I'm surprised that Rondo was able to do what he did going up against the Celtics defense, but sometimes that happens. For as good as they are at defending point guards, you'll see the occasional big game like this one and the time that John Wall went absolutely crazy on them. Shooting guards, Avery Bradley 32.1. He was a nice play against a poor Sacramento defense, and Will Barton put up 43.7. It was a solid price, but he wasn't something that I really loved. Small forwards, Kent Bazemore, 34.1. He looked underpriced, a nice performance there. And Luol Deng put up 26.1. Don't think you really would have had Luol Deng in a lineup. The power forward spots, both of these guys, I think, were pretty straightforward to pick.
Percentages.
He had 41.6, and Aaron Gordon went for 44.6, while the center, 43.4 for DeMarcus Cousins. And overall, the best lineup you could have assembled would have given you only 361.4 points. So you would have seen in your lineups and your contests, numbers would have been relatively down on what we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks. Now, before we have a break and transition into DFS, time to look at the trade talk portion of the podcast, where I look at a trade that's submitted by a listener and go through it using Basketball Monster's trade analysis software. The trade comes in from Vatsal Bell, who's on Twitter at Vatsal Bell. If you want to follow him, that is VATSALBEHL. His trade, now he doesn't give me many particulars, which I would have preferred. His trade is Aaron Gordon and Stan Johnson for Chris Bosh. Now, 2-for-1s are just not a thing. Yes, they're a thing, but you have to replace someone. So you're getting Chris Bosh, you have to add someone in. So I've looked at it, and I'm going to assume that this is a 12-team league. Assume it's a 12-team league, and that, you know, an average sort of ranked guy who's available off the waiver wire might be Courtney Lee. So that's the way that I'm looking at this one when trying to analyze this trade. For you guys watching on the video, I'm going to bring it up on the screen now. There we go. You see that? Yes, I hope you can. All right, so Aaron Gordon and Stanley Johnson in exchange for Chris Bosh and, say, Courtney Lee. Could be anyone. You'd have a look and see who it was that you were going to add off your waiver wire, but I'm going to put Courtney Lee in for the sake of argument. If you're in a deeper league, it changes the dynamic of this. So this was, say, an 18-team league. I would probably say, you know what, Gordon and Johnson might be the better option because the value of who you're going to be able to add off the waiver wire is going to be much lower. And that's why it's important to know, yeah, the settings of your league and how it really impacts things. You go to a shallower format, you're in a 10-team league, and this really skews in one direction over the other. Now, you can see the numbers here that if you're getting this Chris Bosh-Courtney Lee pairing, you get a positive gain of 0.3. Now, that's obviously key. And you could also use that Courtney Lee spot as a streaming spot. You can use it to pick up hot free agents. If this is a 10 or a 12-team league, it feels like a no-brainer. You will get extra scoring. You get it, look, by using the Courtney Lee example here, you're going to get an extra 3.4 points per player. You're going to actually get more three-pointers because Bosh has been shooting around at a ridiculous rate. You lose rebounding because of Aaron Gordon's strong rebounding, but if you put a big man there instead of Courtney Lee, maybe you don't lose rebounding. Your assists are going to be break-even. Your steals are going to be break-even. Your blocks, they should be relatively break-even as well. And what you're going to do is you're also, based on this pick of players that I've got, you're increasing your field goal percentage, you're increasing your free throw percentage as well. So it obviously depends on who you'd be adding in that spot, but Lee's just an example player. But in general, Chris Bosh has a Z score of 0.91. No, he doesn't. I can't read. He's got a Z score of 0.21. Aaron Gordon is negative 0.19. Stanley Johnson is negative 0.35. Now, I've got both of those guys currently set at 30 minutes a game for the rest of the season. Johnson will play a little bit more now. He'll play a little bit less when KCP comes back. Gordon is hovering around that 30 now. Maybe he plays 32, but I think that's being sort of in the middle of what Skiles might want to do, and he might limit him, he might, you know, bench him, whatever. Both of them at 30 minutes. I've adjusted their projections to see, you know, sort of what they're doing as they get better and as they increase their role. But overall, you want Chris Bosh. He's going through a slump, and this is a great time to go and get Chris Bosh, because if you can give away two guys who you likely just picked up off the waiver wire in the last 2 weeks, you might have held on to Gordon for a bit longer, you might have held on to Johnson for the last 3 or 4 weeks, whatever. These are two guys who either you added off the waiver wire or you picked with your 10th and 13th pick in the draft. You can trade them for a guy who's a top 50 player. You do it. And then you look at that extra roster spot and you add them. Now, again, if it's a 20-team league, those guys don't become your last and second last picks. Gordon and Johnson become mid-round players, equivalent to a round 6 and round 5 sort of guy, if it's a deeper league. That's the difference that these things have. Now, Bosh might be then a 4th-round player. Gordon might be a 6th-round player. Johnson might be a 7th-round player. And then adding someone off the waiver wire is going to be well down, and it's going to, they'd have a much bigger Z score. Gordon and Johnson would have a higher Z. The waiver wire would have a bigger negative, and it might not work out in your favor. But as always, if you're using this Basketball Monster Trade Analyzer, looking at this gain column is not the be-all and end-all of everything, because it really depends, and you can adjust it using these buttons up here. You can see my mouse hovering to turn on. I'll scroll up so you can see. Categories on, off, or set to punt, and you can, if you're, whatever your punting strategy is, and it will change the value of all these things. But just because overall the value gives you 0.3, that's a gain. If you're punting points, then a lot of that value disappears. If you're punting rebounds, well, it's even a bigger win in this case. It really depends on the way that your team's built up, and even if you've got your punt settings in, and it might say, oh, that's a 0.1 gain for that side of the trade, look how it breaks down. Do these categories matter to me? And that's what these buttons here mean, trade and trade analysis, trade and team analysis, and trade and projected standings. And it will give you the projected standings. What does this trade do to me? What does it do to my opposition? And what does it do in the standings? Does it boost me up? Does it drop me down? Is it worthwhile? Even though it's a positive, it might be a net positive, it might be a net negative. It's very, very important to look at that, because as I mentioned, and as I've said plenty of times, nothing happens in a vacuum. You might get better, but this actually might be a better trade for your opponent because of exactly what they're punting and what they're, maybe not this case, but what they're looking for and what they're punting. It's very not murky. It's very, not subject. I think you understand what I'm trying to say. Dependent. There's a lot of different factors that go into, do I accept this trade? Did I win this trade? Etc., etc. In a roto league, it can even get another layer of complex. Do I do this trade, and does it make this person lose an extra point off the standings? Do I gain enough points by doing this? Does me getting worse in one category is offset by me getting better by more in a couple of other categories? There's a lot of different strategy that goes involved to it, but I'm just trying to show you that the general principle is, if you can get a top 50 player for 2 waiver wire guys, you generally do it, and then you work out the other stuff later, and you use that position, and you can grab the next Aaron Gordon, you can grab the next Stanley Johnson off the waiver wire, you can grab someone who gets all of a sudden a bigger role at the trade deadline with that extra roster spot that you've created, and you might even get yourself a top 50 guy and another top 70 guy and end up with the 2 best players in the deal. Definitely a possibility. So, Vetzal, thank you for your contribution. Thank you for sending your trade in. Tomorrow we're going to be doing Dynasty Corner. And just remember that over the All-Star break, we are still going to be having podcasts, doing quite a few different things, going to be doing a real trade talk show based on your real-life trade suggestions. We're going to be we're going to be doing a Dynasty Roundtable. I'm probably going to be doing a halfway, even though it's not halfway, a 65% way rookie review. I'm going to be doing that as well. A few other things in store, hopefully really, really close to working on getting an NBA player on the podcast as well, so that's really exciting. And send me your guesses. Send me who you think, which NBA player that I am potentially getting on the podcast. I won't tell you if you're right or wrong, but I want to see if anyone can guess who the player is that I am really close to getting on this podcast. Send me a tweet, which you can find me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. You can see my little lineup there on the screen. I forgot that I had it up. Here we go. Now, where are we? Oh, yes. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back for some DFS action. Before the break, there's going to be a quick word from one of our sponsors.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
Hero, a band out of North Carolina. So our commiserations go out to you, the guys in Joe Hero and Scott. I assume you are Carolina Panthers supporters, so my commiserations go out to you on a must be a disappointing day, but I'm sure a very proud day for your team making the Super Bowl after a very unexpectedly successful season. Let's talk DFS. There are 10 games on. Let's get stuck into them. The first one is the Sacramento Kings and the Cleveland Cavaliers. There's obviously a few injury situations we need to look at here. Rudy Gay is considered questionable with his ankle issue. And on the Cavs side of things, we've got Kevin Love, who had that thigh bruise. He is questionable. And Matthew Dellavedova is questionable with a hamstring issue. The other guy that we need to look at on the Kings is Ben McLemore. He doesn't have much of an impact. Well, nowhere near as much of an impact as what these other three guys do. At the point guard spot, Kyrie Irving is playing really well at the moment. Now, his salary is up to $7,200. It's a really... Just actually, before I get into this, I think that that Monday is going to have super value. There are lots of different options across lots of different games and at lots of different positions. And you're going to have some... I had some difficult choices going through and talking about these guys. You're going to have some... You know, there's going to be very few wrong answers. At the end of the day, there will be wrong answers. But when picking lineups, I think there's going to be very few lineups which are actually wrong, because there's going to be a lot. Look, you can look at Kyrie Irving and go, you know what? He's a really good play, but there are heaps of other options in this game. I think everything lines up really well for DFS purposes, salary-wise, injury situations, matchup-wise. And there's a lot of good things to talk about for DFS. Anyway, back to the point guards in this one. Kyrie Irving put up 39 in the last game. He's averaging 35 across his last five. His salaries have now jumped to 72, but that's not that high. Kings, not a great defense. That's fair to say. So I'm definitely okay with using Kyrie Irving. He has been playing obviously a lot better lately. Has to be considered. The other guy you got to consider, you have to consider almost all the point guards here. Darren Collison at 4,800. He's less than 5,000. He's averaging 28 points across his last three, and that's only in 28 minutes. He's basically a fantasy point per minute. You think you can get 28 minutes? You're going to get 28 points, and you're going to make salary at 4,800. So he's a nice cheap option. Whereas the guy that's in front of him, Rajon Rondo, he's at 8,400. He dropped to 50 today. He's averaging 36 across the last five. He probably has not the worst situation, but his salary is just the highest. So he's not a guy that I'm keen on. But in a GPP, he can probably... Well, he has previously gone biggest out of all these guys. And 50 points going up against Kyrie Irving on defense is not out of the question for Rondo. So he's not a bad GPP guy, whereas Collison's a nice cash guy. And Irving, I think, fits for both sort of formats. At shooting guard, Marco Ballinelli will start again for the Kings, regardless of the status of Ben McLemore. Now, Ballinelli is priced at $4,000. I reckon he's a good cash and tournament option as well. He gave us 25 points today. He's averaging over 20 in the last five, and at $4,000, you feel pretty confident that he's going to be able to get 20 points, you know, on most nights. On the Cavs side of things, I like J.R. Smith. He's got the other situation where he is a little bit more volatile, but he's got a really easy matchup. If Kevin Love is out, I like Smith even more. He took a ridiculous 16 threes in the last game, and that enabled him to put up 31 FanDuel points. He's at 5,300, so it's not an exorbitant salary, but he tends a little bit more towards GPPs rather than cash because of the nature of his game. Iman Shumpert is not a bad GPP guy as well. If this game is blown out early, he's priced at 3,700. He could have a 25 or 26 point game, and that could work out nicely in your favor, but there's no chance that I want to rely upon Iman Shumpert in cash games. The small forward spot, this is one of the ones that I really debated. Not necessarily in this game, but over the slate. Who do you spend up with at small forward? And just another thing I've noticed over the slate, big men, like centers and point guards, there aren't many great cheap options. You generally have to go with these guys across some of your wings and power forward spots. Regardless, there's two big name small forwards on the board, Kevin Durant and LeBron James. LeBron is priced at 10,200. LeBron's lowest score in his last five games is 42.6. LeBron's average across the last five games is 47. His highest score is 52. Now, the risk associated with this and the risk associated with Kevin Durant as well is they've got great matchups, but what if they're winning really easily? Will LeBron play 37 minutes? I doubt that he will in this one. I think that he doesn't go under 30, and we've seen KD go under 30 a few times this year. We've seen LeBron do it maybe once or twice, but there is a risk in that. But that Sacramento, for as up and down as they've been, they do keep games relatively close most of the time. They'll end up getting beaten, but they keep them close. So LeBron feels a bit more safer than KD, which I'll talk about a bit later with KD. But I like him at 10,200. With your studs, I always talk about 5x value. With your studs and your $10,000 players, you don't necessarily need them to go for 5x. 4.5x is about where you need them to be. If you get sixes and six and a halves out of your low price players, especially for GPPs, and LeBron is rock solid, and if you don't get 40 out of him, it's a massive shock. And at 10,000, that's fine. Yeah, 45 from him. If you don't get 45, it feels like a bit of a shock. On the Kings, Rudy Gay, we don't know if he's playing. I would be surprised if he did. Omri Caspi's at 5,100. Definitely hasn't been living up to that sort of play of late. Probably steer clear of him, especially when he's got a matchup on LeBron, and we don't love Richard Jefferson, obviously. The power forward spot, Tristan Thompson. The projections look nice for him. He's at 4,600, though that salary sort of scares me off. This is a great matchup. So if there was a matchup that you were going to throw Tristan Thompson out there, this would be one of them. I'd be more inclined to do it if I knew Kevin Love was out. Now, if Love is playing and there's no restrictions, he's at 7,500. The Kings really bleed against power forwards. Love had been putting up some pretty nice numbers prior to his injury. He's averaging 35 across the last five, and that includes the 21 he put up in the last game where he got injured. So at 35 points for 7,500 against an easy team, I like Love here. If he is out, Thompson becomes an okay sort of guy to look at. On the Kings side of things, Willie Cauley-Stein, he's at 4,300. Really hard to trust in cash. The Cavs are shut down power forwards pretty well. Not the greatest spot to go and use him, I don't reckon. Boogie Cousins, 11,100. It's a lot of money. The Cavs have been restricting opposition centers pretty well. Timofey Mozgov, for as poorly as he's played from a fantasy point of view, he's still a good defensive guy. Tristan Thompson's a pretty good defensive guy as well. The Cavs system is pretty good defensively. I'm not saying that Boogie's going to get completely shut down, but when you talk 4x for Boogie or 4.5x for Boogie, we're still talking over 50 points at 11,000. That's a big amount. Now, he is averaging 49.5 across the last three. His lowest score in his last five is only 39. But there's more risk associated with him at 11,000, especially when there's a couple of other, well, there's another 11,000 guy on the board who I would prefer using. As for Cavs centers, Mozgov, no. Kostakoufos on the Kings at minimum salary. He's not bad, Kostakoufos. Not a terrible option, but yeah, still pretty terrible. The next game, the Chicago Bulls and the Charlotte Hornets are up next. The Hornets are favored by 6. The total is 204.5. Now, earlier this season, the Hornets played the Bulls and absolutely destroyed them. Jimmy Butler is out of this game. He's been ruled out already. He likely won't play Wednesday as well. So that's going to mean more Derrick Rose. He's at 6,900. He's averaging 43 across the last three. This is a situation where I love using Derrick Rose. it would be great if he'd have that low 6,000 salary, which he had a few weeks ago. It has jumped back up. But even so, without Butler, he's getting a ton more usage. He put up 38 in the last one. He's had a 53-point game in his last five. He's looking a lot better. Some nights the shooting won't go, but for DFS, he's getting the opportunity, which is really all that matters. Love using Derrick Rose here. On the flip side, Kemba Walker gets to face off against Derrick Rose. Now, Walker is averaging a lot less than Rose recently. He's priced at $1,500 more expensive. Not thinking that I really love using Kemba here at that price. Now, there is an opportunity for him to go crazy, but his shot really hasn't been falling as of late, and I would rather not spend that extra $1,500 that I need to spend with him. I would rather take Derrick Rose. The shooting guards, I mentioned that Jim Butler is out. Etuan Moore will get another start. He's at 4,100, and he has been, you know, at 20 points, almost a lock every game for 20 points. Sometimes not, but at 4,100 cash GPP, I think that he's in there. He's got upside. He had a 39-point game against the Kings in the last five. The Hornets are not a tough defensive matchup. You get 39 points at 4,000 salary. That's nine. You're closing in on 10x value, and that's great. Jeremy Lin at 4,900. Don't think we can really spend up for him. The production hasn't been there for him. Tony Snell, cool. I don't think so. Jeremy Lamb, no thanks either. The small forwards, Mike Dunleavy is going to be playing his second game here for the Bulls. Don't really think that he's got much of an impact DFS-wise, but Nick Batum is the guy here. 6,700, a really positive matchup for him. He dropped a 50 in the last game. He's averaging 38 in the last three. I don't think it gets much better than using Nick Batum here. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist's production started off on fire when he came back. Last few games have been a bit quiet. He's strictly a tournament guy for me. And Dougie McDermott, Mike Dunleavy, nah, no thanks. I don't reckon there's much appeal in those guys. At the power forward position, Cody Zeller is at 4,700. Again, just he's not super appealing, but the Bulls' big man bump is a real phenomenon. He put up 25 in the last one. Is there another? He only needs 24 to get 5x value. Could he get 25, 26 here? Yeah, I think he could. He's not a bad cash game option, and maybe not a great tournament option, but I think he's a decent cash. Bobby Portis has moved up to 3,800. He's had the last two games, 26 and 28 minutes. One was without Pau Gasol. One was when Taj Gibson was struggling. I'm not putting a massive amount of faith in Portis, but all he needs to do is crack 20 points and he has made value. So he does come into consideration in case something happens and he can go out and put up a 25 or 26.9. Taj Gibson at 5,400. Yeah, don't mind using it. He feels like it's just sort of bang on. Not the greatest situation. I'm not all that keen on using him. I would much rather, say, spend an extra 500 and use Marvin Williams, who's been playing a lot better than him recently. He's averaging 32.5 over his last five, Marvin Williams, and he's been a little bit more consistent as well. At the center position, Pau Gasol is at 8,800. Yes, it's an expensive price. Matchup-wise, it's not perfect, and I don't know that I would really use Pau here. He's at 8,800. It's pretty high. His highest score in his last five is 47, and at 8,800, that just sneaks over 5x value. He did have 44 in the last game, and he looked really good. But this is quite an expensive price for Pau, so I reckon it's something that I will find someone else at that center spot rather than spending up on Gasol there. The next game is the Clippers and the Sixers. The Clippers are favored by 9.5. The total is 205.5 points. Ish Smith is questionable with what's he got? Just had a tweet come through and just got distracted there. With our Scott Vanderhayden said, I reckon you are getting Matthew Dellavedova onto the podcast. Interesting. I guess you'll find out soon. Ish Smith dealing with an ankle problem. If Ish Smith is out, the guy is going to be TJ McConnell, and he was the guy in the last game. So that's a situation to watch out for. If McConnell starts at 4,000, he is one of the better point guard plays, despite the negative matchup against Chris Paul. At 4,000, he doesn't need to do a huge amount. Ish Smith at 6,900, don't love him. Coming off an ankle problem, playing Chris Paul at almost a 7,000 salary, I don't love it. Chris Paul's got a great matchup. He's at 9,600. That's a big salary. Now, could the Clippers conceivably smash the Sixers? Yes, they could. The Sixers, in general, aren't as smashable as they have been. So I'm not sure that Paul gets as much of a night off as what if he was playing, say, the Nets or the Lakers. But at 9,600, it's pretty expensive. 45 fantasy points. Can he get into that range? I'm not all that confident in him doing it. Isaiah Cannon at 3,900 is a nice tournament option, but that's really about it. The shooting guard spot, in this game. Nick Stauskas for the Sixers, I don't really think he needs much consideration. Jamal Crawford, though, is worth a look. He's at 4,800. He's been putting up some pretty nice numbers recently. He's averaging 28 across the last three, and at 4,800, yeah, I'd be pretty happy with that. So he's a guy to definitely put into consideration. His lowest score in his last five is 22, so being really consistent as well and getting plus 30 minutes in the last two games without Rivers. And if he can get 30 minutes again, I think that there's a real good chance for him to drop a 26 or 28.9. JJ Redick, quiet. Love the matchup. He is worth it. A tournament look only, and that's probably about it. Oh, the other guy you can throw in, you know what? This feels dumb for me to say. Lance Stephenson into a GPP. Maybe the game does get out of hand and Lance gets extra run without Rivers there. He finds himself playing 25 minutes as a one-off sort of thing and puts up a big performance. It might work out. It probably won't, but not often that I recommend using Lance Stephenson. At small forward, Bob Cove's been struggling. He's now under 5,000. Matchup-wise, it's not great, but he still put up 24 points in the last game. And at 4,800, I reckon that's not bad value for Bob Cove. I would be okay, not in a cash game, but in a tournament, definitely fine with using him. And 4,200 for Wes Johnson, you feel like you can get 23 points out of him basically most nights, which is what he's been doing the last three. A nice matchup here for him. I reckon we could see a really big Wes Johnson night here. I'm okay with getting him into lineups. Paul Pierce, Luke Marmute, Hollis Thompson, Jakar Sampson. Is there a crapper quartet of small forwards in the NBA? I'm going to say no. At power forward, here is where we get a little bit of excitement happening. Nerlens Noel is at 6,900. That is not a big salary. He's a 32 or 33 average across the last three. He feels like a really solid cash game option. Yes, I know that Jahlil Okafor playing does restrict him somewhat, but he dropped 37 in the last game with Okafor. Okafor's been back recently, and he's still averaging 33 across the last three. It does impact him, but it's not making him completely useless. He's still able to put up some defensive numbers, and he's looking really good in doing it. So I do like Nerlens Noel here. Not much. Jeremy Grant at 4,700, that's too high for a guy who's going to play that bench role. At center, I love DeAndre Jordan here. He's at 8,500, one of the other good options of center on the night. He's averaging over 40 in the last five games. If you think the Clippers are going to blow them out, maybe Jordan gets rested and Cole Aldrich gets some extra run, but I'm not sure that the Clippers will get a massive blowout, so 40 points is definitely on the cards here for DeAndre. His lowest score in his last five has been 30, and he's putting up some pretty good numbers. Well, as Jahlil Okafor, 6,300, the salary is appealing. He dropped almost 50 in the last game, but his performances prior to that haven't been much to write home about. But I don't think he's a complete waste of a guy in a cash or a tournament situation. With 10 games on, you can probably find someone else in a better spot, but I'm not completely writing Jahlil Okafor off. The next game, the Roy Hibbert revenge game. The Lakers taking on the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 11 with a total at 206. This is blowout potential here. Roy Hibbert, who the man we were just talking about, he is questionable with an ankle problem. Julius Randle is probable with an ankle issue, and Kobe Bryant always questionable with his shoulder issue. Now, Kobe has been lighting it up of late. We'll get to him when we talk shooting guards. Let's talk point guards first. D'Angelo Russell, too young for me to put into my DFS lineup, so I think we'll leave him alone at 4,800, although in a tournament, if you had a competent coach, maybe you'd throw him in, but at this point, he doesn't. Jordy Clarkson is at 5,700. The salary makes me a little bit nervous against a Pacers team, but he did put up 35 against the Spurs. That's obviously an impressive outing. He's averaging 25 across the last five. Not quite there for me, but not a complete write-off. And George Hill at 5,800. I would rather have Clarkson than Hill at the moment, to be honest. Shooting guards, Kobe. If he plays, what do we do with him? Do we roll it again? Can he do it for another game in a row? He's averaging 39 points across his last five. He's priced at 6,800. He feels like a tournament-only option to me, given his volatility. Maybe he plays 24 minutes. Maybe he plays 34. Maybe he's terrible. Maybe he's great. But the appeal of him at the moment is definitely there. Lou Williams is at 5,400. I'm not keen on using him. The form has not been there. And Monte Ellis has dropped back off. So at 6,500, that feels a little bit too expensive. The small forwards, Paul George, love the matchup. But with a guy who is admittedly been saying, dealing with leg soreness and tiredness and all that sort of stuff, if they're up by 30 against the Lakers, there's no chance we see him in the fourth quarter. That makes me turn off Paul George a little bit. He is at 8,700, and he could easily have a 40-point game, but I'm a little bit wary. I would rather spend that extra 1,500 and use LeBron. I'm more confident of LeBron, you know, playing more minutes and being in the game for, in a meaningful game for longer than I am with Paul George against the Lakers. Not much else small forward-wise in this one. CJ Miles, maybe at 3,700. You'd throw him into a tournament because if there's a team you can get hot against who's got poor defense, it is the Lakers, and we know he's got 30-point upside. But apart from that, not much to really look at in this one. The power forwards, Miles Turner is at 5,600. The salary is right up there. His production's not quite where it needs to be. Yes, he put up 26 in the last game, but it's more seasonal leagues and DFS leagues that he's really sort of killing it at the moment. I think that a lot of people will still be on him, and I would, I was going to say I'd fade him, but I probably won't. Again, not against the Lakers. It's hard to fade him there. You might, if you're in a tournament, if you see that you think he's going to be owned, you see a lot of chatter about him in forums and Twitter and all that sort of stuff, maybe fade him there, but he gets a significant Lakers bump here. So he is worth looking at. But his play of late has been just a little bit off. Julius Randle, in fact, is giving you more points than what Turner is recently. He's giving you a better average across the last five, a better minimum score across his last five, a better score across his last three. The problem is he faces a much more difficult defense than what Turner does, and that knocks him down a couple of pegs. But at 6,400, he showed that he could do it against the Spurs, and if you can do it against the Spurs, then you're not a bad guy against the Pacers. The problem with the Spurs is their defense was a little bit weakened without Duncan, so maybe that accounts for some of it. But Randle is still a guy that I have a little bit of interest in, and Turner. So both of them have, yeah, both the power forwards in this game are definitely worth considering. At center, Jan Mahinmi didn't do much in his first game back. He's still working off the rust. I reckon we can leave him alone. Roy Hibbert, I don't care that it's a revenge game. No thanks. And Jordan Hill at 4,700, a really positive matchup. He's against his former team. He is worth throwing into a tournament because if Mahinmi struggles, maybe Hill gets the call and plays some extra minutes and he goes for a big one. But it's not reliable enough for any cash game formats. The Toronto Raptors and the Detroit Pistons. The Raptors are favored by 1.5. The total here is 205 points. James Johnson is questionable with his ankle problem. The point guards, Kyle Lowry, obviously the most dominant point guard in this game. For as good as Reggie Jackson has been, you know, Kyle Lowry has been just that little bit better. Lowry is priced at 8,800, though. He's almost a full 2,000 above Reggie Jackson. And honestly, their numbers, they're different, but they're not different enough for me to justify a $2,000 difference. Lowry put up 50 in the last game. Great. Not sure he can do it against Detroit, who's got a pretty decent defense. I will probably be fading Lowry. Reggie Jackson at 6,900, though, he does interest me. He's averaging over 30 in the last three games. He put up 32 in the last one. The Raptors have been allowing point guards to play relatively well recently. He's not a must-play guy, but he's in a... I'd rather save the 2,000 and play him than I would with playing Kyle Lowry. 3,900 for Corey Joseph. He's a tournament option, especially if James Johnson happens to be out. The shooting guards. We know that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is out for the Pistons, so that means we're going to get Stan Johnson starting. He's not listed as a shooting guard on FanDuel, so we're not going to cover him just yet. DeMar DeRozan's the guy to look at, though. 8,200 for DeRozan. He put up 42 in the last game. He's a 36 average across his last five. He's got a rock-solid floor to me. He's 30 points across the last five. He's a pretty nice floor. Defense-wise, the Pistons do shut down shooting guards pretty well, but a lot of that is KCP. He is out, so I feel a little bit more confident in using DeRozan, but do I feel 40 points confident? I probably don't, to be honest. So I reckon I can find some other value at shooting guard rather than using him. And Terrence Ross at 4,300. If James Johnson is ruled out, he is worth a punt in a tournament. At small forward, Stan Johnson is at 4,900. He's averaging over 30 in the last three games. He's had a 44-point game mixed in there. You think there's going to be 30-plus minutes pretty comfortably at 4,900. I wouldn't bank on him getting less than 30 in most cases. I think that he is a great option. He could see big-time minutes. Really, really like him as an option here. Marcus Morris at 5,400. The Raptors have been shutting down small forwards, even with Damari Carroll on the sidelines. And we know that Morris is someone who does tend to put up some underwhelming lines. Not the guy for me here. At power forward, Ersan Ilyasova struggled in the last game. He's at 4,800. I'll leave him alone. And Luis Scola and Patrick Patterson, you have zero idea of what you're going to get out of those guys. Both of these teams have negative matchups. Let's just leave the power forward position in this game alone. At center, Jonas Valanciunas facing off against Andre Drummond. Drummond is at 8,300. It just feels too expensive for me. He has been good, but it hasn't been translating into just massive, massive DFS nights. This has got an opportunity for him to have a bounce back, so I don't hate using him, but I know there's a couple of other decent price centers that I would rather use above Andre Drummond. Jonas Valanciunas, the minutes is what the real concern is for me. 6,400 here. Only averaging 21 minutes across his last three games, giving you 24 points. That's over a point a minute, so that's great. Just give him 30 minutes. That's the concern. Now, the matchup for him is quite positive. Teams have been able to do pretty well going up against Drummond. So do you think that he can go for 35 points? That's sort of where he needs to be. I'm not all that confident that he can do it here. I love Jonas Valanciunas, but maybe I'm less confident that Dwayne Casey gives him enough minutes to be able to recoup that sort of cash. The Denver Nuggets and the Brooklyn Nets. Whew, the Nuggets are favored by 2.5. I would think that they've got a much better chance of winning than that. The only thing is they're coming off a back-to-back. And the total is 204 in this one. Darrell Arthur is questionable. Let's look at the point guard situation for the Nets. Donald Sloan and Shane Larkin. Who knows? I don't know what they're going to do. Hey, who had the good game in the last one? Who was the better player in the last one? It was Larkin. So that means Sloan's probably going to get more minutes in this one. He's at 4,300. Larkin's at 3,900. I don't even reckon you want to use either of them in a tournament. Look, their upside, it's not bad. But seriously, who knows what you're going to get. Emmanuel Mudiay, 5,400. I love that price. He dropped another 33 today. He's averaging almost 30 across the last three. That's not an expensive price for Mudiay. It almost doesn't get better than playing the Nets for point guards. Yes, he's going to be horrendous for the percentages. We don't really care. For DFS, I'm all for using Emmanuel Mudiay here. At shooting guard, Will Barton. He's the guy, 5,900. That is not a big salary. He has been a little bit up and down, but recently, the last three or four games, he's getting it more up than down. Definitely fine with throwing him out against the Nets. Gary Harris, not returning value at 4,600. I'd rather not. And Wayne Ellington at 3,800. The projections really like him in this one. That salary is not big. It's more of a case of in a tournament throwing him in and hoping he hits six triples. That's not going to happen all that often. Joe Johnson is at 5,600. He is up and down, but not a real difficult matchup. But that salary just feels a little bit prohibitive. We know he can go big. Obviously, he did it the other day, and his average of 27.7 across the last five is okay. But that's just it. It's just okay. It's nothing that's really standing out to me. At small forward, Danilo Gallinari. He's at 7,100. He's been basically scoring and doing nothing else. I don't love it here. I really like Danilo Gallinari, and I like what he does in standard leagues, but a lot of that comes from his free throw efficiency. It's not really working for me as a DFS play. At power forward, Thad Young has been in a pretty nice run of things. We know the bump you get from playing Denver as a power forward. 6,900 for Thad Young feels like it's the right price. He's been a 37-point guy on average across the last three games, really sort of getting back into the groove, and there's no team that can keep you in that groove than the Denver Nuggets, or more likely to keep you in that groove than the Denver Nuggets. Ken Faried's at 6,100. No thanks, just not a consistent... Or yes, it is a consistent role. It's consistently low. So he's not a guy that I want to look at. One thing I do want to look at is how Chris McCullough plays in this one. It should be his NBA debut, the guy who suffered that ACL tear last season, dropped right down to the end of the first round. Myself and Mark Roberts, we co-own a Dynasty League, and we just picked up McCullough, and let's hope that he can give us something, nothing DFS related, but really interesting to see him on the court. I know the Nets value him really highly. They have him as almost an untouchable in trade talks, which is pretty weird. But I think that they can. I think they obviously value him a lot, and he would have been a much higher player if he didn't suffer that ACL in college. He is going to be someone to watch for this second half of the season. At center, love Brook Lopez. He is at 8,700. Yes, it's expensive, but you're going up against the Nuggets. He is averaging 41 across the last five. He's had a couple. Last game was a bit down. The game before wasn't so great. Ownership should be suppressed. There's 60-point upside here for Brook Lopez. Love it. The guy he's going up against, Nikola Jokic, he's a full 2,300 less. Love him as well. Now, his production has been a little bit less lately. The last three games have been a bit down. People are very keen to jump off Jokic for whatever reason. I don't know. Again, it's trying to read into the thought process and the psychology of people. But when you see that people see what he did today, go, 19 minutes, what's wrong with this guy? Useless. Like, you get those comments sometimes. That means ownership will be a little bit down across the board. I think that he has a massive chance to bounce back against the Nets here, and he is not someone that I'm shying away from. The Portland Trailblazers, Portland Trailblazers and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are favored by 4, and the total here is 198. This Memphis, at the start of the season, they weren't really holding up their end of the bargain in terms of their defensive strength, which is something that's obviously been with them through a big portion of the last few years. Recently, though, it's kicked up a notch. At point guard, now Mike Conley is at 6,600. He's been really consistent, but just not consistently high enough. We'll leave him out of it. And Dame Lillard, he's at 8,900. For those of you that don't know, that's almost $9,000. And against the Grizzlies, I don't want to spend $9,000 on Damian Lillard. Look, he's been consistent. His lowest score across his last 5 is 35. His highest score is 50. That's pretty good. He's averaging 41 across the last 3, but he's at 9,000. I need him to really kick it. And with some other point guards on the board, I'm not sure I want to really spend up a little, but it depends how I structure the rest of my team. He's not a complete write-off, but he's relatively close to it. At shooting guard, Alan Crabb, I was sick in the last game, and he missed that game. He's at 4,300, probably wouldn't be considering him anyway. CJ McCollum's not a bad option. There are really no high-priced shooting guards on the board. He's at 7,500. I think he's the highest-priced shooting guard that there is out there. He's a 36 average across the last 3. The same thing holds for him as it does for Damian Lillard. You're playing the Grizzlies, there's going to be a slowdown in pace. There's going to be a slowdown in fantasy production. But at 7,500, it's 1,400 less than Lillard. Can I get 32, 33 points out of him? I feel like I'm relatively confident in being able to do that. So he's not a terrible play if for some reason you do want to spend up on the shooting guard position. Courtney Lee at 3,900, much better value than 4,200 for Tony Allen. He dropped 21 in the last game, Courtney Lee, but don't really think that there's much excitement in him using him here. The small forward position. Alfruk Aminu is at 5,100. Playing a little bit better lately, averaging 25 across the last 5 games. This is not a plus matchup. And Jeff Green's at 5,600. That salary's come way up. I don't want to use him in cash. I'm still okay throwing him into a tournament, but he's becoming less and less appealing the more that goes up. If Noah Vonleh is out, Mo Harkless at 3,700. For sure, throw him into a tournament. We saw what happened in the last one, especially if Crabb is out. He played 29 minutes and easily recouped value. Don't. If we have Crabb out and Vonleh out, I'm a bit more comfortable using Harkless into a cash game, but in a tournament, he's got great value. 5,200 for Matt Barnes. I reckon he is a nice cash game play, and he's a really good tournament option as well. He dropped 37 in the last game. He's averaging 25 across the last 3. He's a little bit underrated. Yes, there's a couple of duds he throws in there, but I'm okay with using him. At the power forward position, Myers Leonard, I know that I don't want to use him. He hasn't been great lately, but he's actually listed as a center on FanDuel, so we'll get to him in a sec. Zach Randolph at 6,000 has been putting up big numbers. This is a really positive matchup for him. I'm okay with using Randolph at $6,000, a 30-point average across his last 3. He's dropped a 39-point game in that span. I really think that Zach Randolph is in a nice situation to have a pretty decent game here. And let's look at the centers. Just in case you didn't know, if Noah Vonleh plays, I don't want to use him. The centers, Marc Gasol, 7,900. Dave Yeager with some interesting quotes saying that Marc Gasol is basically playing on one leg. That is a little bit worrisome, but at 7,900, worrisome enough that I don't want to use him. Nor do I want to use Myers Leonard. Nor do I want to use Mason Plumlee, who's at 5,500 and just can't get the minutes at the moment to really get things kickstarted. And it's not, you don't want to take a punt against a team like the Grizzlies and hope that he can turn things around. Orlando and the Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 8.5. The total here is 201 points. Toby Harris with that ankle is considered questionable. We obviously need to check on his status. If he is out, then Evan Fournier would probably get another start, and he was massive today, so he would be someone we look at. We'll talk about him when we get to the wings. At point guard, Lord Alfred Payton, 5,200. Really big game from him today. Tournaments only, can't trust him. Jeff Teague's at 6,100. He has been pretty rock solid, averaging over 31 across his last 5. Okay with him in cash and in tournaments. Dennis Schroeder is only a tournament option if you think that Teague is going to get limited, but that's just not something that has happened at all recently. The shooting guard matchup, Kyle Korver at 3,700. He's always worth having a look at in a tournament, but I don't want him in a cash game. Vic Oladipo at 6,500. The salary's coming up, but his production is basically matching it, so he is a fine guy to play. It's not like the Hawks shut down wing players very well anyway. And Evan Fournier, 4,600. If Toby Harris is out, okay throwing him out there at 4,600. If Harris is in, I'll probably look in a different direction. At the small forward position, Toby Harris is just not a guy that I'm going to use regardless of his injury status. 5,100 for Kent Bazemore. Love the matchup here. I really think that he is in a pretty good spot. Dropped 34 in the last game. He's averaging 25 across the last five with a couple of stinkers thrown in there. So that's not bad. You're averaging 25 when you're at 5,000 salary. I reckon he is someone that's worthwhile. And Mario Hezonja, the minutes have been okay, but the production just doesn't really match up from a DFS point of view anyway, so I don't reckon that he is worth throwing in, even in a tournament. At power forward, Aaron Gordon at 4,900, dropped 44 today, big number from him. Yes, he has definitely some risk, so probably lean more GPP with him, but I think the minutes should be pretty consistent. The Hawks are not a great defensive team against big men. Okay with using him, and the guy he's going to be matching up against, Paul Millsap, is at 7,800. Anytime you get Millsap under 8,000, you feel like you're getting a pretty good run of things, and against the Magic, this could be easily 40, 42-point outing for Millsap. He's got that sort of upside. Center position, Nick Vucevic versus Al Horford, a couple of really good players, a couple of guys that I really enjoy watching. Nick Vucevic is at 7,800. It feels just marginally high, but 7,100 for Al Horford doesn't feel too bad. Do I want to use either of them? I could see using either of them. If I'm in a tournament, I throw Vucevic in there. If it's a cash game, I feel a little bit more confident using Horford, but definitely okay with using Vuce in a cash game as well. The second to last game, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves are favored by 1.5 points. They've been playing exceedingly well lately. The total is a massive 210 points. Nick Pekovic is doubtful. Kevin Garnett is doubtful. And Kevin Martin is questionable. If we look at the point guard spot in this one, Norris Cole looks to get the majority of the minutes once again. He dropped 33 in the last game. He's at 5,100. It's a pretty easy matchup for him given recent production. He can have a stinker, definitely, but overall he's been consistent enough to throw him in cash and in tournaments. Drew Holiday at 7,000, that just feels a little bit too expensive given the way that he's still being limited slightly with his minutes. Don't want to spend up there. And Rick Rubio at 6,900. The Pelicans have been really restricting point guards recently, and maybe I do have to give Norris Cole some of the credit for that. They've been not a good team to match up against. Rubio has been playing well lately, averaging 33 over the last three games, but given the way the matchups have been going recently, probably don't want to get him too much of a look. At shooting guard, Zach LaVine at 4,800. The sheen comes off him a little bit if Kevin Martin happens to play, but otherwise at 4,800, I'm okay running LaVine out there. Bryce DeJean-Jones stunk in the last game. He's had a couple of good games, a couple of stinkers. Minimum salary, tournament, that's about where he stands. And 6,700 for Andrew Wiggins. He's averaging 36 across the last three after those couple of big games against the Lakers. Dropped off a bit in the last game. Not that the matchup's not going to be a tough one for him, but I don't really put a huge amount of trust in him being able to do enough for me to spend almost $7,000 on him. At small forwards, look at these group of players. Shabazz Muhammad, Alonzo G, Tayshaun Prince, Damian Rudej, Nemanja Bjelica, Luke Babbitt. Let's get to the next section. The power forwards. Here we've got some players. Anthony Davis is at 10,300. Now, the Timberwolves have been pretty good defensively. There's no Garnett, so he does have an impact defensively. But Davis is averaging 51 across the last three. You can easily spend 10,000 on him and feel pretty confident about it. Even in a bad night, 42, 45 points seems about the right spot for Davis. Definitely fine with using him. Ryan Anderson, not so much. 5,800, only strictly rely upon him in tournaments. And even then, it's hard to use him against a Timberwolves team who do restrict guys at that position. Now we go to the center spot. The other young freak big man, Karl-Anthony Towns, 8,800. That is very, very high. This is a great Pelicans bump, but 8,800 is so high. Can he get 45 points? Can he get 42 points? I'm going to say he can. I reckon he's in for a really big game here. I think this is a nice Karl-Anthony Towns spot. I am wary of it, definitely, at that salary, but his lowest score in his last five is 31. So you've got a little bit of a safety net built in there. Gorgui Dieng at 6,100 is a great mid-price center. I think he's one to smash. There's going to be no Pekovic. They're going to ride him 35, 38 minutes. You're looking 35 to 40 points from Gorgui Dieng. I reckon pretty comfortably he should get to that sort of area. So he is definitely a guy that if you want to save some money at the center position, Gorgui Dieng is that great mid-round option, mid-round or mid-price option. The next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Phoenix Suns. The Thunder, with the biggest individual spread of the day, are favored by 13 points. The total is a massive 207. It is the biggest total of the day. All of this, well, the total makes you go, yes. The spread makes you go, no thanks. The players make you go, yeah. There is a few guys here that we need to look at. Archie Goodwin is at 5,200. It looks like they're just going to continue to give him big minutes. You're playing against Westbrook. For as daunting as it seems, it's not from a fantasy point of view. He should be able to go for some pretty nice numbers. And on the Thunder side of things, there's a couple of guys to look at here. There's Ross Westbrook, obviously, 11,100. You almost locked in at 50 points for him. He's averaging 55 across his last five games. His lowest score in his last five is 46. Maybe he gets a couple of minutes lopped off in this one because they're up, but I still feel confident that I can get 45 points out of Ross Westbrook here. The guy, other guy to look at is Campaign. Now, he hasn't been great since returning from his concussion, but what if, and this is only for tournaments, what if in this game that Westbrook plays 32 minutes and Campaign gets 18 minutes and puts up 20 points? That's not crazy. He'd be a tournament guy, and you'd hope for it to be a blowout. I wouldn't want to put Westbrook and Payne into the same lineup. He'd be a guy that I put him in and get some other high-priced guys around him and have a look at that spot. But it's just there's a little bit there to think about with the chance of Westbrook maybe being somewhat limited. My boy Dion Waiters, Mr. Least with Most, at 4,000. That's still not enough. It's not cheap enough. He needs to be about 2,000 to really get my interest going. Devin Booker's at 5,400. He's okay. I really like him, but his DFS numbers just don't pop off the page. And at 5,400, he needs to do a little bit more popping. At small forward, Kevin Durant is going to suffer the same issue as Russell Westbrook. Does his minutes get cut? He has been incredible. He's had an average of 52 across his last five, 53 across his last three, dropped 65 against the Warriors. The matchup's beautiful. He's at 10,800. By all means, use him, but there is that slight risk that his minutes do get cut slightly. 4,700 for his opposite number, PJ Tucker. Had 5 points in the last game. It's not really that good. At 4,700, I'd probably go a different direction. If he was about 4,000, I'd be more comfortable with it. Speaking of more comfortable, Serge Ibaka needs to get more comfortable in what he's doing. He's at 5,600. There's no chance I'm spending 5,600 on Serge Ibaka unless it's to be contrarian in a tournament, when I can look across the court and spend 5,600 on Markieff Morris, who is averaging 39 across the last three, 33 across his last five, dropped 42 in the last game. I really think that Markieff Morris is a nice cash option. Look, contrarian is definitely Ibaka here, and you could construct lineups with both of them, but Morris is the guy with the current runs on the board. Last but not least, the centers. Enes Kanter, just ridiculous numbers in limited minutes. 5,200 for him, so you are paying up for it. But a 24 average across the last three is okay. 33 in his last game was nice. He's averaging almost 30 across his last five games, Kanter. He is someone that is definitely worth looking at. And the guy who plays in front of him, Steve Adams, not doing too badly himself. He's at 4,400. Our projections really like him here. He feels like he's a consistent cash game play that's going to give you 22 to 25 points, and you'll be pretty happy with that sort of action. The other side of things, Alex Len and Tyson Chandler. Who knows which way the minutes are going to go? Len into a tournament. Chandler, forget about it. Neither of them for cash games, and I reckon that does it. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day. At point guard, Campaign at 3,500, who I mentioned, really a tournament option. Archie Goodwin, 52, and Russ Westbrook, 11,100. There weren't really any good cheap point guards on the board, so that's why I've gone with Payne there. Shooting guard, Ballinelli, 4,000. J.R. Smith, 5,300, and C.J. McCollum, 75. Small forward, Stan Johnson, 49, Nick Batum, 6,700, and LeBron James, 10,200. Power forwards, Aaron Gordon, 49, Markieff Morris, 56, and Paul Millsap, 78. And the center, Steve Adams, 44, Gorgie Jeng, 61, and Brooke Lopez, 8,700. That's it, guys. We are done for today's podcast. Don't forget to check out SeatGeek.com, the sponsor of today's podcast, and use that promo code REDROCK, one word, get yourself $20 free money. It's free money on your first purchase. Doesn't hurt you to download the app and just enter that promo code anyway as a way of supporting the podcast. Of course, Basketball Monster has everything you need for seasonal leagues and for daily fantasy leagues. Heaps of stuff happening over at Basketball Monster with myself, Kyle, and Matt churning out content and helping with the tools and the projections and all that stuff and interacting with you guys on the forums and the player comments section over there. And of course, Hardwood Paroxysm, lots of great articles going up on there. Remember, there's going to be content all through All-Star Break. Make sure you're subscribing on either YouTube or iTunes. Tag a mate in the daily Instagram and Facebook contest. Get some more people involved there. That's a great way you can support the podcast as well and get some bragging rights over your mates by picking some of these contests that we have running over there. All right, we are done here. I think I did not too bad with it going over time. Nah, almost an hour 30 as well. I'm just full of shit at the moment. I can't get all this information out in a timely manner. Again, I apologize. We are done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.